The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. This is the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. Today, actor, comedian, wrestling fan extraordinaire Ron Funches is on Talk is Jericho. You know him from Undateable. He's also on the third season of Transparent on Amazon. Or if you're a Comedy Central fan, maybe you know him from the Nick Kroll Show. Or how about the fact that he's won At Midnight 18 times? Yeah, I'm a one-time At Midnight champion. He is an 18-time At Midnight champion, hosted by Chris Hardwick, of course. He's very funny, very talented, very much a wrestling fan. He grew up in Chicago and went to a lot of shows. We'll hear some of his favorites. He also is a regular at the PWG shows in Los Angeles. They're becoming an event in the LA area. Lots of celebrities showing up at those shows, including Ron. Ron's going to tell us why he thinks they're so popular. He's also talking about his comedy influences. You might be surprised who made his list and who didn't, and what it's like to film Undateable completely and legitimately live. It's crazy. Speaking of funny, Team Tiger Awesome has some crazy and funny to share with you in the form of their new podcast, The Team Tiger Awesome Show. And I was their guest on the newest episode that came out last Sunday, and we made up wrestling gimmicks. Wait to hear Mondays. Wait to hear mine, Timmy the Carpenter. Go to the Team Tiger Awesome Show to hear my wrestler that I created called Timmy the Carpenter, who actually was a real guy. You need to go check this out. It's a guy that we trained with, Lance and I trained with, named Vic DeWild, who had an idea to do a gimmick called Timmy the Carpenter, and that was my made-up character. Truly does big guy, tiny man. Gage does what is he called? Dandy McGee or something like that. Awesome Dandy McGee. And Mondays is a hobo, a street bum. Funny stuff. You got to check this out on the Team Tiger Awesome Show. And if you like the show and you listen to it, cut a promo as your favorite creator wrestler from Team Tiger Awesome Show. You could be Bo Archer. That's another one. And I will retweet it and I will post it. And you could win a prize as well. So go to @TTAwesome or @TalkIsJericho on the Twitter after you listen to the creator wrestler episode with me and Mundy and Truly Engage. And then cut a promo as your favorite of the five wrestlers that we created, and I will retweet it and you could win a prize. All right. That alone is worth checking out that episode. Go to podcastone.com or to iTunes to get the latest episode of the Team Tiger Awesome Show. And while you're there, hit the download button on Keeping It 100 with Conan. That show just keeps getting better as well. Conan and the Gang, Disco Inferno, and KG doing some great work. Had some great stuff. Broken Matt Hardy on that show a few weeks ago. It was classic. Go check it out. Huge hit. Got another program, another third show coming to the Jericho Network very, very soon. Stick around and listen. I will let you know who it is. In the meantime, in between time, check out the shows on the Jericho Network. Make sure you leave a 5-star rating and a review when you subscribe on iTunes. And subscribe to Talk is Jericho as well if you're not. All right, Ron Funches is ready to roll. And I'm ready to roll into this one with Ron because I did my DDP yoga. I was feeling a little bit stiff and sore this weekend after a great match with Neville in Chicago, another great match with Sami Zayn in Indianapolis, and then a fun match last night with Kevin Owens and Ezno and Big Cass with one S. Yeah, funny stuff last night. I don't know if you guys missed it because you were watching the debate. Go back and check it out if you can. I was on a roll, baby. Maybe I'll come out there and sit on your lap. All right, but I got a lot of aches and pains from that, and I've been on quite a role, so I needed to do some DDP yoga to help me out. And it's not just helping me, it's helping on AJ Styles, Corey Taylor, Rich Ward. Mick Foley's lost so much weight in the DDP yoga program lately. He's looking so slim and trim. And you know what? DDP and DDP yoga can do the same for you. You want to get slim, you want to get trim, Dallas can help you out. And now it's easier than ever thanks to the DDP Yoga Now app. It's all I use these days. The app has all the workouts, which means I can do it right from my phone. And the app has all sorts of cool features as well. You can use it to track your heart rate and calories. You can use it for pain tracking, measurements, progress photos. And if you're in the need of a little extra motivation, you can access motivational messages from DDP himself. And now DDP Yoga app subscribers won't ever get bored doing the same workouts over and over again, because DDP has added completely new 2.0 workouts and weekly live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. And for a limited time, you can get the DDP Yoga DVDs for 20% off. That's 5, 10, 15, 20% off. Plus, you get 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. And all you got to do is go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. All you got to do to take advantage of this great deal is go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and get 20% off the DDP Yoga program, plus 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get in the best shape of your life, physically, mentally, and go change your life and go do it now. All right, so this is how it is nowadays when you actually become friends with someone, when you follow each other on Twitter. And I'm here with Ron Funches. And that's how you pronounce it, right? It's not some fancy.
No, not Funche. Nothing special. I always say it's like lunches with an F or bunches with an F. It's easy. People always want to add to it, but it's pretty easy.
Exactly the way it sounds.
Yeah.
But that's, we became friends, quote unquote, by following each other on Twitter, and here we are now face to face for the first time ever.
Now we're real friends.
This makes it real.
Now we're real friends. We've been friends for a long time in my mind, Chris. Before we want to get started, I want to say thank you. I want to thank you for something that you did for me that you didn't know about, because it was on a DVD, and I don't even know if it was your DVD or a different one, but I was watching it and you said something that really affected me. I remember you said something about people are going to tell you that you can't do something because they never did it. You can't take their advice because, of course, to them, you can't do it.
I got that. It's cool to hear you say that, because I got that from Paul Stanley, who said that in a video in 1987. And he said, the only people that tell you can't do something are the ones that have failed. And I'm not going to tell you that you can't do something because I did it. You can do it. So to hear he said that to me, and I got to thank him for it. And then you hear that same thing. It's amazing to me to have that.
It's a good cycle. It's like, yeah, for sure.
But actually, I have some heat with you, Ron, because I went on at midnight and I won. I became the champion. But then I hear, you're not Ron Funches. What do you mean? 18-time champion of at midnight. So I'm telling Hardwick right now, you have to put you versus me together. I want to see just how good you are.
Okay.
Because it's like the most random show ever.
Yeah, you know. No, I love it. Yeah, it's been really helpful for my career. It's a really fun show because you can just show your sense of humor without really burning my material, going through all my moveset. So it's fun. I'll take you on any time. And, I mean, I'll be straight. I'm 14-time champion.
Oh, 14 times.
14 out of 20, but I'm still the best of all time. I'm the Ric Flair or the Undertaker of At Midnight. And come on, I'll take you on.
So I'm getting the vibe that you are obviously a very big wrestling fanatic.
Yeah.
You grew up that way? Just where'd you grow up at?
I grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. I got into wrestling. I grew up in a house of basically all ladies. My mom and my aunt and her daughter and my sister.
When I was in high school, I was a big metal guy, and this is when Duran Duran was at their peak. So I hated this Duran Duran, and I took a black T-shirt and I wrote on it with white paint, "Death to Duran Duran," and what the hell was I thinking? I never got one date in all of junior high school. Nothing.
Yeah, that guy's really passionate.
Yeah, he's
about
really over the top. He loves metal so much that he does never kiss a girl ever. I look back like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm so heavy, and that was just, this is what happens. When you try and follow, you know, what the chicks want you to do, it always ends up in a disaster.
It does. It does. You just got to be about your life and your passions, and then people come around you.
So were you like always a kind of like a funny guy like in class, or because a lot sometimes comedians are very quiet?
Yeah, no, that would be me. I mean, I was funny. I was voted class clown, even though I didn't know why. I was like mostly just making fun of you guys. I didn't think
I thought you guys hated me if you knew what I was thinking
you're not
about
it, right?
Yeah, you're not getting what I'm doing.
And but it was always I was never like loud and or anything. It was more like making fun of the teacher on the side. Like, mm-hmm. that was my style. It was very dry, very just, I mean, I'm a shy person in general. So my day-to-day is a little bit hard for me. I always get lost. Like, I'm just like, it's just walking
like
around.
Just driving?
No, walking. Like, I have a poor sense of direction. Like, I have a lot of ADD. I can barely finish sentences in general conversations. You can ask her. And then, but you get me on stage, everything kind of slows down for me, and it works for me, and I feel free, and I feel open. And yeah, and I always feel like with any good comic or any good wrestler in general, it's always themselves just amped up, you know?
Right.
And that's what I do when you see me on stage. Like, this is the me where I feel I'm not worried about what you think of me. You know, I'm just, this is, and a lot of my jokes are like, this is just what I feel. And like, and you take it as a joke. So,
well, and that's why, like you said, like the best gimmicks for anything show business related, especially in front of a live audience, is your normal personality turned up to a 12. And then the real beast shines through, you know. Who are your favorite wrestlers?
Favorite wrestlers growing up, or now, are all type. I'll just do a lot. I love Eddie Guerrero. I think I've always been just big into performances, and his the way that he performed so uniquely, and you could always tell he was having a great time, and just the things he would do with the ref bumps and like making it look like the other guy had hit him with
right,
the chair.
Right.
Like, just the fun humor. I've always been a fan of comedy and wrestling. So I love Eddie. I love Bret Hart. I love Ric Flair is probably one of my favorites of all time. I mean, you're one of my favorites. I'm not going to not say it because you're here. I love good workers who are also have a good personality. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's show business, right? That's the idea of it.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about getting into wrestling?
Yeah. I totally did. And when I was younger, that was like, I think this is what I'm like, eventually I'll just get in shape and I'm going to be a wrestler. That's what it's going to be. But I always knew I just wanted to perform. But I was like, maybe I'll be a manager.
Did you have like a character or a gimmick?
Yeah.
Because everybody
I'm
has it when you're a kid. You have like, I'm going to be like, for me, I was really into Christian heavy metal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to be Christian Chris Irvin and throw Bibles into the ring, or into the crowd as I went to the ring. Like, just like, what are you talking about? What did you have in mind?
I grew up, I was living on the Oregon coast, and I lived in Oregon a lot. And so my whole thing was that I was going to be Ron the Reckless Negro Funches. And my whole bit was that I was going to be like a crazed, just a wild Negro from the Oregon coast who just wore blue jean cutoff shorts and had crazy hair and was always like, hide your weed and white women. There's a reckless Negro coming. Basically kind of based off of like Jack Johnson and boxing and stuff, where it was
right.
just like, I'm everything that the white establishment thinks you should be scared of. You know, that was my character.
You can put that and sell a lot of t-shirts, the reckless Negro.
Yeah, well, I already do. I sell them just at comedy shows.
Do you use that gimmick in comedy shows?
Yeah, because I did that on At Midnight. I did that character once on At Midnight, and people would get it, so I was like, I might as well sell
whatever.
Shirts.
Whatever.
Trying to get them on pro wrestling tees.
You are a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you watch now still as
well?
Oh,
yeah, very much so. We were just talking about, I was just trying to procure my tickets to Lucha Underground for the Ultima Lucha. I go to PWG out here.
No kidding.
I watch a lot. I mean, I watch Raw every week. And
talked to the Young Bucks yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about how PWG is becoming kind of like the hip thing in town,
mm-hmm.
to where there are celebrities showing up, like yourself. They mentioned Sofia Vergara,
mm-hmm.
was there.
Yeah.
True Blood cast is there.
Yeah, often. Yeah. It's what I always tell people who aren't that into wrestling, or and they were like, hey, what's just a good thing to go do? I'm like, you gotta go to PWG. It's an event. To put it with comedy things, there's a show out here called The Meltdown on Wednesday nights at this comic book store.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of like the biggest event in comedy weekly that we have. Mm-hmm. It just packs out this comic book store, and it's just a great vibe. And every time you have a set there, it's just like you just feel like you're the best at comedy. And I was like, that's what it's like at PWG. Like, that's
gotcha.
What that
so is. A small venue with just a crazy vibe, right?
Yeah, exactly. And with crazy talented people who feel open to really show their stuff.
Mm.
And that's what I feel like. They're very match up that way.
So, I mean, there's, you know, like I mentioned before, when you're a comedian or a musician or a wrestler, there are a lot of similarities being on the road and, you know, touring from town to town. Now, I mean, obviously you got a lot of stuff going on in LA on TV, but have you spent a lot of time also on the road, coast to coast, all that sort of thing as well?
Yeah, yeah. That was most of it. I mean, the TV things kind of just came within the last couple of years, you know, and I've been doing comedy for 9 years. So, most of it was just me traveling on the road. And that's, I always was like this, it reminds me of a lot of being a wrestler. I always match the two up where it's just like you go city to city for $50 sometimes, putting your body through a table. You might do it physically or emotionally, but it feels the same either way. And then you go to the next place because you're just trying to get better at your craft because you know that the payoff can come later, you know. And that's most of comedy is.
What was the comedy scene like in Portland when you started out?
It was luckily for me, it kind of just grew at the same rate that I was in my comedy, because it's, when I started, it was very just empty, and nobody really had any blueprint of how to succeed. There were a couple of older comics that that were of note, like Dwight Slade and Susan Rice, who were touring national comics, but for the most part, it was like, hey, you're going to end up going to Idaho and doing these shitty things called triple runs where you just make $50 and you make enough to get enough gas money to make it to the next gig is how they got
that's
it set
up. That's a
triple
run?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I was just like, I don't want to do that. So I was like, I don't want to have to change my act to try to fit people in Billings, Montana or something.
Well,
like that.
If you have when you start going over to Iowa or Billings, not a lot of black people, a lot of almost white guys there too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, which has never really been a problem for me, because I mean, that's Oregon in general too.
Oh yeah.
So it's not, I mean, that's never the issue. It's just more like you go there and they have a specific idea of what comedy is, which is you yelling at them, and that's not my style. And so I was like, I just want to work on my style and do what I do, and I'm not going to even worry about making money. And that was kind of that was what was great about that scene, is that a lot of people had individual styles because no one had a blueprint to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's just doing their own thing. And then the scene kind of grew, and now we have festivals and we have a great club, and it's just helped me meet people and open for great people like Mark Maron or John Mulaney, and I met them all in Portland. And then when I got here, I had a group of support to be like, no, this guy is funny. So
most of the time when you're doing, you know, comic tours, you're just going to one specific venue for like 3 days for the weekend. It's not like you're driving from town to town to town.
No. I mean, that would be more of a bigger thing. Like if you're doing just theaters and stuff where you can set up one nighters, I mean, that's what I'm working towards. But yeah, for the most part, you're in comedy clubs working Thursday through Saturday, Sunday if they force you to, and you're doing, you know, two shows a night. And then you're leaving with like $1,500. So it's like,
not bad. Plus however many Reckless Negro
shirts
you can
that
sell.
You sell. Yeah, yeah.
Did you have some, what was your, if you had like a really bad gigs from time to time, like what's your
Always.
Worst gig?
The worst gig I remember was, it was beginning of March, right after Black History Month, and that I'm saying it for a reason. And so it was a couple days after Black History Month, it's March 1st, I'm doing a show in Tacoma, Washington at this venue that's a crappy nightclub that used to be a bank. And they have, I walk in and there's just like a mechanical bull going, and there's people, two girls riding it together. It's very like supposed to be sexual, but it's not doing it for me. I'll tell you that. And it's just like, just this horrible place. And I start my setup and no one's listening. But I'm like, well, I'm going to struggle through it. And then I get one joke out, and then two black guys come in, and they're just the loudest, most stereotypical, like, movie theater type of black guys you could ever see.
You mean, like, yelling out?
They're just
screaming?
Like, oh, man, oh, what's up? What's up, Pete? Oh, I see you over there, my man. All right, Julie, oh, I see you. Oh, my man's up there doing the comedy thing. All right, man. All right, you going to do that comedy thing? You do you, man. I'm going to be over here. Keep talking is what I'm going to do. And so then they just keep going. And then I get a moment of silence. And I just go, it's only 2 days after Black History Month. And I already hate niggas again. They didn't laugh, Chris. Nobody laughed. Nobody laughed. And no one laughed at me for the rest of my set. And then I left. And I hid in a van until everybody else finished their sets.
How is that for you? Like, if you go out to do, I don't know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and you walk on stage and you tell a couple of, like, your normal jokes that are, like, the zingers, and nobody gives a shit. Like, is it hard to continue through the rest of the set?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen as much anymore because most of the shows, thank God, because of the TV show. And
sure, but I mean, when you started, though.
When I started, yeah, it was, I mean, especially with my style and the fact that I'm a black comic, and sometimes they would just promote me as a black comic, and you would, then the people were expecting a certain thing.
Like, how do you mean? Like, here comes Ron Funches, he's black.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what you were saying, the poster?
No, well, they would just book me in rooms where it was like, oh, Bruce and Earthquake were just here, and then now I'm here, and then it's just like, they were going to be different styles. Not to put anything, I love Bruce,
gotcha.
I love Earthquake, but they're very the standard, like, egotistical, loud, like, mm-hmm. in your face. And I'm very laid back and relaxed, and I kind of invite you into my world, mm-hmm. is what I would say my style is like. And so I would do a lot of shows where they would start, I'd do a couple jokes, and they'd be like, and either they would embrace it, or they would just be like, oh, no, I don't like this at all. And so I would do a bunch of shows where for 200 people, probably 150 of which had gotten free tickets. Mm-hmm. And so I would have pockets of 20 here, 20 here, who are, like, dying, loving it. And then I'd have this sea of indifference. And I would try to work everybody, but I was just like, you know what? I mean, the fact that the people who like my material aren't just liking it. They're dying. Like, mm-hmm. they're loving it. Like, that is all I need. Because then, I mean, I don't need... I'd rather just kill with a smaller group of people than to just slightly hit with everybody.
I gotcha.
You know, I want the people who like me to be with me for my whole career.
See, I always wonder about, like, I just went to see Jim Norton a couple weeks ago in Tampa, and, like, Jim's a great guy, he's my friend, but even the opening comedians and stuff, when I go to a comedy club, I want to laugh. Like, say, you know, hey, I got a glass of water, and I'll be laughing, because, like, that's why I'm there. I get
yeah,
it.
You're primed up.
Yeah, yeah. So if I go to a wrestling show, I'm going to be cheering, or I go, yeah. Like, you know, once again, anything that's a live performance, I want to get into it. I never understood that people who go to live events to just sit there and do nothing or complain about it. I mean, I don't understand
well,
that
I just
type
think,
of...
I mean... I don't think we get it because we're not like that, mm-hmm. you know? But I feel like you're like, there's just different types of people in the world, and there's people who are at that point are negative. And a lot of times they just want to go out and be seen. They're trying to hit on girls, mm-hmm. or whatever. And a lot of times it's jealousy, you know? Because they're like, the attention's off of me. Like, you know, normally in my world, the attention's on me. And now I have to sit in the dark and I have to watch this other person. And the girl I'm with is laughing at him, and, you know, and then then those are the guys that usually be like, oh, and then they want to heckle you, you know, and then you shut them down and then they feel bad, you know, because they just want attention. You know?
I always thought, I love the Seinfeld's comment with the hecklers. It's like, I've got the mic. You can't win.
Yeah.
Like, I'll always win when you're heckling.
Yeah, you got to learn when you're younger, though. Sometimes you give people the mic and you lose and you make mistakes. That you got to learn. Like, never give
Like, how
give
do you mean?
Like,
you
know, sometimes the worst way you can go about a heckler is to let them actually affect you and mm-hmm. make you mad, especially in my thing, because a lot of my material is very upbeat and very happy, and I try to twist it. So if I break out of that and I show you this real anger, it's hard to get you back on my side.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to always be like, you can't get me. Whatever. Like, da, da, da. You know, the second that I'm actually like
And I've done this before where people have gotten me where it's like, oh, for real? All right. And then you're like,
oh, you actually
what are you
giving them the mic?
Yeah.
Let them talk
yeah.
in
Yeah. And then you, and then you lose.
Yeah.
Then you lose because either they are funny or they right. don't want to give you the mic back because they're drunk and now they got the mic. And so
that's a bad situation.
Yeah. So, so never give up the mic.
Because I mean, but it's like if it's an obvious heckle, though, you almost have to say something. If you're up there talking and someone just goes, "Hey, you suck," or something like that.
Yeah.
What is like? Do you have a line that you say back? Or
well, I mean, I don't have anything. I used to have things prepped. I used to have things prepped up, and then sometimes they'd work, and sometimes they'd be too mean. Now it's just always like, oh, I mean, it's like dealing with my son or anything like that. It's like, oh, we'll listen to you. And then I will assess it, and then I will respond to you.
Accordingly.
And yeah, like, what do you need from me? Do you need me to yell at you and tell you to shut the fuck up? Because that used to be my go-to. Uh-huh. Sometimes that worked, sometimes that didn't.
Yeah.
And I will. But if what you, maybe you just made a mistake. Maybe you were too excited. And I'll address that, and I'll just be like, oh, you just must be so excited to be here. You think you can, I'm going to show you how this works. You laugh, and then you you know, and
yeah,
then it works
yeah.
like that.
Well, plus, too, as you play bigger venues, now you're over. Like, you're,
yeah.
you know, no one's going to, you know, when you're more unknown, that's kind of what happens
yeah.
for all of us. You know, is it like, for example, too, I was going to ask you, like, let's say it's a wrestling match or even with Fozzie. If the crowd is just really dead and you can tell they're just not having it, you'll cut stuff. I'll cut this song or just cut these. Just go home, finish it up. Do you ever put some element of improv into your set, or do you do like, I've got this subject, this subject, this subject, and just let it out there and go? Or do you have an element of just playing?
I used
with it?
To what I would call go in a robot mode if I could tell a set wasn't going well and they weren't liking it, and I was like, well, let's just do my set and I'll go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd always hated it, and I think it was Marc Maron who wrote something about how he was like, I'm always gonna make sure that I have fun no matter, like, if you're not having fun, I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have fun. And so that's been my motto the last few years, where it's just like, if you're not having fun, I'm going to address it, and then I'm going to make sure that I'm having fun. You can choose to leave, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We already got your money.
Yeah.
if this wasn't for you, you should have researched better, and
yeah.
you can leave.
Right.
And then I'm going to have fun. I will talk about how it's not going well and how I thought this was going to go better, but I've stopped, like, I would rather, especially now that I have a little bit of money, because before it used to be like, oh, we need to make sure everyone likes me and management needs to make sure I get that check. Yeah. And now it's just like, I will go back home. We're going to have fun. I have material. I want to work out. I need to try new things. So you're going to just have to go through it with me. And it's made it a lot more fun. I think it's made me a more fun performer to watch now that I'm less desperate, because I think
you're more confident.
Yeah.
Confidence is everything. Once you have the confidence, like, you can go in there in any situation and I'll kill it.
Yeah.
You know?
And it just comes from experience and experience and talent. I mean, I watched Dave Chappelle recently at the Comedy Store, and just watching this mix of the utmost experience with the utmost talent with this guy who's just smoking a cigarette, who could not care less whether you're there or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. And that's like, this is what I want to work towards. And I know you can't cheat it. You can't cheat that, experience. You can't just be like, I'm confident now.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you have to go through it.
Become it. Yeah.
So now I'm just like, oh, he's got to do as many sets as possible.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You mentioned Chappelle and you mentioned Marc Maron. Who were some of the comedians that influenced you when you were first getting into the biz or when you were a kid?
Well, my biggest influence is Lucille Ball.
Really?
Yeah. I love Lucy. I love Lucy.
No, in what way?
In every way. In the fact she's an excellent performer. She's an excellent stage performer, radio performer. Show was great. Excellent businesswoman. You know, she was the first
She owned a studio, you know? She was the first woman to own a studio. She pioneered the three-camera format. She greenlit Star Trek and Mission Impossible.
How does she green? Oh, Desilu Productions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, she wasn't just responsible for I Love Lucy. She was responsible for three classic series coming
Interesting.
Out.
Interesting. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Here's another thing that you might not know is that she's responsible for Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What?
Seriously. She had a special like in the mid-70s, the Lucille Ball entertainment special. You know, they used to have those. And he came on screen. They needed like a really muscular television repairman. And he had one or two lines. And she thought he was hilarious and said, "You are funny." And she sent him to go to the Friars Club with Milton Berle and all those old timers. And he hung out with those guys and got his comedy honed up. And she was like, "You are going to be a star." And she was his mentor.
I didn't know that.
Interesting, right?
Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
So she obviously was able to pick out talent, like you said, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. How were you exposed to Lucille Ball?
When I was a kid, it was just kind of, it would come on after cartoons. So I'd watch my cartoons, and then I'd watch Lucille Ball and Benny Hill.
I love Benny Hill. Yeah. In Canada, they used to show that all the time.
Yeah, because then you're like, you're getting both. You're getting funny, and you get to see boobs.
Yeah, so
you're
like, that's it.
Oh, this is the best thing in my life.
The music. Yeah.
Everything's great.
Yeah.
So it was that, and then it was Dave Chappelle for sure. Mitch Hedberg. Probably.
Dude, how funny is Mitch Hedberg, man? I love that. I bought an ant farm. They're not growing me nothing. How about some carrots for me? Because his vibe was like he was super dry, right?
Yeah.
Like, what was some of his bits?
Well, he had one of my favorite was the where he was at the restaurant and they're calling people and they're like, "I went to a restaurant," and they were, it was like, "Dufresne, party of three, Dufresne, party of three," and then they just moved on. Like, "Smith, party of two." Well, hold on. What happened to the Dufresne? We need to, they're missing. You're like, "We need to do a search party of three."
For the Dufresne.
Yeah, that's where it ends up the bit. It's like, "Dufresne, search party of three." Yeah, like, and then there was like, "Escalators can never break, they just become stairs."
Yeah, right. Because I wanted to join a protest. No, wait, I'm not into protests, but I don't know how to express it.
My favorite part is you doing these bits. Because you have like everything but the punchline.
Worst comedian ever. So did you kind of try and hone your style after those guys that you mentioned?
When I first started, it was easy for me because I was very shy. And like, I just have to hold my head down and I don't have to worry about things. It took me a little bit, and it's just kind of my own voice, and just it changes from like, "Oh, I need to write a poop joke, or I need to write an abortion joke," and then it's just like, "I'm just gonna write jokes. I'm gonna write what comes to me, and it's gonna be from me, and that's it." And I think also the acting has really helped me break out of my shell, because then it was like, now I can do things physically, and I'm more aware of my body. I'm more aware of being able to get a laugh off of just doing a look instead of a lie. And the thing you would do in wrestling is like, why work harder? You know, like if I can get a laugh off a look, it's twice as good as have to write in a 2-minute joke.
How are you? Yeah.
That's the
once again talking about the confidence and also the sense of timing. When like you said, that timing of just the look, like this, I think last week or whatever, I stole Woods's trombone. And before I broke it, I just held it up in the air and looked at it. And people were just going nuts. It was like one of the biggest pops in the show for a stupid trombone.
Yeah.
But you just, like, 10 years ago, Chris Jericho would take it and broke it and went, ha-ha. But you just stand there like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And people are going nuts for it. I'm going to stand here even longer.
Yeah.
And then even longer.
Milk it.
It's that comedic timing, that pause of, like you said, just waiting for the people to respond.
Yeah. So that they see it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And they can feel it.
Yeah.
You know, the advice that I always got from Vince McMahon is you want people to be able to hit their friend beside them and go, "Did you see that?" If it's a big move or whatever it may be, let them digest it so you can talk like, "Oh my God," like you said, like the two black, "Oh, look at this, man. Oh my God." Like whatever it may be. And if you cut your own pop off, you're hurting yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah. I learned that for a long time ago. And that's a lot of my style is very quiet and very, also just very timing based, where I'll just, I'll wait. And also, it's like, I'll wait because I feel like it deserves more laugh.
Yeah, that's sort of like a famous comedian trick, is people will laugh, but if you don't move, then the laugh goes away and then it comes back again.
Yeah.
You know, repetition is gold in comedy.
Yeah.
Was there anybody that took you under your, under their wing, kind of, and gave you some advice when you were starting out?
Yeah, yeah, a few people did, for sure. And you may or may not know them. One for sure from Portland was Dwight Slade, who is, he's a great comedian. I will mention, because maybe then you'll know who he is that he was best friends with Bill Hicks. Are you familiar?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's another Bill great Hicks. Comedian that passed away, right?
Yeah. And so he himself is just a great comedian, and he lives in Portland, and he was kind of the first guy that took me on the road. It took me on the road in a way that was, and when you kind of first start off comedy, there's kind of two different worlds. There's this like more of an artistic world, and then there's like this bar gig, let's just get as much money as possible, and we have to be very crude, and it's a lot more cursing, and a lot of those headliners are cheating on their wives and sleeping with all the wait staff, and those were the guys that I was traveling with at first, and at the time I was married, and so I was very much like, oh no, I don't like this. If this is what this life is, I'm not gonna survive. And he was the first guy to be like, you don't have to be like that, let's go to a monastery and buy some candles, let's go do this, this is how we can be on the road, we can go find something fun to do.
And when you're traveling together, is it like three or four comics in a car?
Usually like
on
the two, maybe three at the most. And yeah, you're just driving together. If you have a couple gigs together, or you know, flying if you have more money.
So once again, that's kind of similar to wrestling. Get the guys in the car and just drive to the gig, and that's whoever's around, whoever's on the show.
Yeah, yeah, cool. You're going to get booked if you got a license. Because a couple of us don't. So you're going to get booked.
So you know, in wrestling, the young guy has to drive. Is it the same with comics? Like the
Yeah, pretty much. The young guy has to drive, or the worst comedian basically has to drive. The guy who's going to be hosting. I always got out of it because I was like, they're like, he's pretty good. We'll just bring him to be funny. And so that really worked out well for me. What were we talking about?
We're talking about your guys that helped you out when you started. Yeah.
Oh, and then it was this guy named John Mulaney, who he's a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
And another one of his friends, Nick Kroll. They kind of really just took me on the road a bunch. And then when I moved here, Nick had a show called The Kroll Show for Comedy Central. And I hadn't written for any shows. I didn't have any spec scripts to give out. I didn't have that type of stuff, but they hired me to write for the show, and they put me on the show, and it really helped jumpstart my career. So I would say, Dwight, John Mulaney, and Nick Ross.
Let's talk about Undateable, which is a show you're doing now, which is really interesting to me because it's this season, and maybe even all the shows, I'm not sure, but they're live.
Yeah.
Filmed live, which is such a, talk about Lucille Ball, that's something right out of the 50s.
Yeah.
That goes, they're bringing it back now. No, is it legit live? Like it starts at 9 o'clock, or do you tape it live?
No, it's legit. It's legit live. We come on, we do one taping at 5 o'clock for the East Coast, and then we take a little break and do another taping
You're
at 8 o'clock
me.
For the West Coast. Yeah. So it's two shows, two shows a night. It's super live because sometimes they'll be like, hey, we're running out of time, we're gonna have to cut this bit out.
Yeah.
And it makes it very exciting in between commercials to have people be like, we can't do this, because like things we rehearse, and then when we do them when live in front of the audience, sometimes they go longer, sometimes they go better, you want to mug it a little more. And so then next thing you know, they're like, hey, we're gonna be, if we shoot it like this, we're gonna be 5 minutes over, so they have to cut this and that. And it's like, it's exciting to watch. It's a great, we get a lot of musical guests. We had Weezer on last week. We had the Backstreet Boys coming. We get a lot of fun people. It's a good show. It's good.
But I mean, because you're a comedian, so you're used to being in front of a live crowd. Is there how is it for some of the actors?
They luckily for us, we got some ones that really embrace it, and they're really good at live performing. It would be difficult. I mean, it's difficult in general just when you have a live audience, because sometimes they don't know how to hold for laughs, you know? But luckily, it's kind of like made them more excited about working and more excited to like, oh, I want to get a killer laugh here. And they're really good at it. We have a talented crew.
Well, it's exciting when you don't have, you're live without a net, literally. It, you know, Chicago is infamous for being one of the greatest crowds in the WWE, you know, world. Like anytime you see Chicago on the schedule, you know, this is going to be an amazing, amazing crowd. Like Chicago's a huge wrestling town, or a loud one at least, you know?
Yeah. That's what I loved about growing up there. And it was, and my uncle taking me to those. Yeah, I love it. I love those things. And always, that's what it seems weird to me, like sometimes, because it feels like they consider those type of crowds anomalies, you know, where you're like, oh, the Chicago crowd or the Brooklyn crowd, you're like, they're the alternate universe. Where it's like, no, I mean, they're the fans. Yeah. Those are the fans. And so I feel like sometimes they should pay more attention to the people those people are rooting for, you know?
Well, once again, though, like, yeah, then sometimes you go and the crowd is just dead and it's like, oh, my gosh, like, not getting any reaction for anything, nothing more. Like the other night, I won't mention the city that we were in, but it's a venue where when the pyro goes off, there's so much smoke. So they have to have these giant fans in there to blow the smoke away, or else it would just look like, you know, like the whole arena was on fire on camera. So we were doing a promo and all I'm hearing is this big wee. So it'd be like if you're trying to tell some jokes in the background, it's wee. And it's just like, this is driving me crazy. I hate this. But, you know, like you said, you got to deal with all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah. That stuff sucks, though. I hate it when you're doing production things and you're just like, you're like, come on. Like, yeah. I have so much to I have to nail this or you're gonna be mad and now there's a fan in my ear. It's the worst.
Is there certain cities for you that are like Chicago is for me?
Yeah. I mean it's all the typical ones, I'm pretty sure they're similar. I love Chicago. I love Seattle. Portland is a great comedy city. Denver is a great comedy city.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the perfect mix of they're smart. There's a lot of colleges in the area, so there's a lot of well-read, smart people, but they're not like too smart to where they're like where they like think they see through it, you
right?
Know?
Weed so, is legal, so they're high.
Yeah,
which
and
helps.
They also, which sometimes can be too much because they're like, but they also drink a lot there. They drink a lot and they're very athletic, and so that's where I recorded my album because I was like, these are like the perfect people. They love to party, but they're well read.
Yeah.
This is great. That's my audience,
and that's kind of the cool the format of the comedy album, which, you know, almost album formats are almost gone anyways, but that's still like, I had some like Robin Williams live at the Met from like about 82. It was so great. Early Eddie Murphy, Raw, classic, you know. Did you listen to comedy albums when you were?
Yeah, for sure. My mom was, you know, she was really into that type of stuff. So we listened to a lot of Red Fox and we listened to.
Oh, he was great too.
Richard Pryor.
So blue at the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Things where you're like, oh no, well, I shouldn't be listening to this. And so it was good. And then, and then there was like Comic View in my house at the time, which was a show on BET where they just had a bunch of different stand ups. Mm-hmm. So from an early age, humor was just always around in my
house. Right. Yeah. You know, it drives me nuts sometimes, though, when and this is probably going to happen to you. You're going to get into the movies and become a great dramatic actor and then just stop doing stand up. Like if you watch like Steve Martin in the late 70s or you watch, you know, Eddie Murphy, like I said, Bill Murray, like their stand up is so funny, so great. And then they get into, you know, big time A-list movie stars, and they just stop doing that stand up, which I never quite understood. You think they'd want to go back and do it?
And most do, you know. Mm-hmm. Most do. And even Robin was when
he never stopped.
A little bit before he died, he would actually be at Meltdown at that comic book store.
Really?
Yeah, because he loves comic books. He would read some comic books. He would watch the show, and then every now and then he'd get on and perform. And it was great. I felt very blessed that I got to see him a couple of times before he died. And for me, and I know most of my friends, it's like you are just a comedian, you know, it's just part of you. And so you want to do stand up.
Right.
You never get tired of, like, even when I'm doing acting and stuff, it's great. And it's great with the live, but like when you're taping things and you're like, oh, I'm not sure if this is funny or not because
you're not getting
just doing it over and over.
And you're not getting that reaction, that instant gratification, whether it's fun or not, right?
Yeah. And then that's what I get from stand up. And so it's like, I'll always need that. And especially, you know, in this business, in this economy, you don't want to, you got to stay diversified. You got to do multiple things.
Were you an Eddie Murphy fan?
Not much. I think I grew up a little bit different era. So it's like
he was already Dr. Doolittle by then. Yeah,
yeah, missed me a little bit.
Let's talk about, you mentioned how you went to some of the Raw and SmackDown, I'm sure pay-per-views in Chicago. What were some of the favorite things that you saw live as a WWE fan?
I mean, the stretcher match is always like something that really affected me, because I was just like, man, thank you, Hulk Hogan, for banishing the evil. and then went to a Spring Stampede, WCW okay. Spring Stampede.
Oh, wow.
I remember I saw the Nasty Boys versus the Road Warriors in a Chicago street fight. And I loved that. That was one of my favorite things. This was on TV, but when you did the list of the 1,004 holes.
That was in Chicago.
That was one of my favorite moments in wrestling, especially just when they cut back to you and you're still in the ring.
Were you there live?
No, okay, no, so I wish. No.
What I did was I started with the list, right? And, you know, whatever I said, move one, move two, move three, move four. We went to commercial break, and then I just started cutting a promo on all Chicago sports teams because I wanted them to be just booing and just flipping out when we came back from break. So Bulls suck, Blackhawks suck, blah, 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 Bears, blah, 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 blah. And then right before they came back, and I was like, hold number 712, and people were just like, boo. Yeah. So it looks like
you had done every
that I had
single
done
one.
They're so mad of me reading these holes. People, I was just like, you know, Dick Butkus is a jerk or whatever. Or Mike Dick or whatever the hell the guys' names were, you know. But like I said, that's the Chicago vibe of it, you know what I mean? What's your favorite match that you've seen?
That's a good question. I don't know what I can tell you a few different matches I love, and love them for different reasons. I really love that match between Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon at King of the Ring, where he broke his tailbone, even though it got real sloppy and weird.
Is that where he kind of gave Shane like a belly to back into the Tron and just dumped him on his head or
something
like that?
Dumped him on his head.
Eesh.
Yeah, it was gnarly, but I really respected Shane a lot after I saw that match.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Ooh, the ladder match between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon. Probably one
classic,
of my favorite matches of all time.
WrestleMania 10.
Yeah. Oh, the match between, this was a new one because I've always been a big fan of Owen Hart, and I just got that Blu-ray and I was rewatching his matches, and I love that match in WrestleMania 10 between Bret and Owen. That's probably one of my favorite.
That's
as far as like, this is not only is this great in ring, it's like, this is like, I'm watching a movie, you know?
Right.
Such an epic.
It was such, and the way that it played out was it started out with Bret and Owen in the first match. Owen wins, finally gets his due. And at the end of the night, Bret wins the title again.
And Owen's, Big Brother is all
he's
on top
still
again.
Bigger. Yeah, exactly. It was a great story. Great storytelling.
Yeah. You know? I think that's one of my, like those would be some of my favorites. I love anything with like when the series between Brock and Kurt, when they were going back and forth, and I just really like when guys are really good, solid wrestlers. Like, I really like Chad Gable. Like, I think he's going to be awesome.
Wow, so you watch NXT as well. I've heard a lot about Chad. That's Chad Gable and his partners Jason Jordan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't seen much of them. What's up with Chad that you like so much?
He reminds me of Kurt Angle. He reminds me of Kurt Angle in the fact that he's very technically sound, but he makes it look fun. You know, a lot of that stuff where you're just going around riding people in positions and stuff looks boring, and he makes it look really fun. He's funny when he does promos, and he's also, I always feel like the best wrestlers to me could be funny, but you never were not taking them seriously. You know, they could always at the switch be like, I'm dangerous.
Right.
And like, to me, you're like, you always have to take him serious because he has that wrestling background.
Right.
So I feel like he's going to be, if they give him a chance, he can draw money for him.
It's interesting though, because NXT's become so big right now. But there's still, you got to make that transition to the WWE, and it's a whole different world once again.
It seems like it.
So you know?
It seems like it goes well for most. But it always takes time, too, you know? I remember, like, when you came in, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, they put you in real hot and interrupting The Rock, and then they dropped you down a bit.
You figured out the WWE system. And that's how it works for everybody. Anybody that comes in from a different place, you can see the pattern every single time, you know?
Yeah.
So when those guys come up from NXT, I think there's a lot of hype. There's a lot of internet, social media hype. And then they're saying, like, what the hell's going on? What happened? But that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. And I've come to terms with that as an adult. I'm like, I'm never, to me, it's like, what's the point of always being like, ah, I wish they treated Kevin Owens better. Or, you know, it's like, there's no point. I'm sure Kevin is fine and he loves his paychecks and he loves everything. Well, I mean,
and what you said, the build will always be there to
yeah,
start up
Yeah, for
again,
sure. As long you know? As you don't give up, I mean, yeah. It just kind of shakes out, you know? It does suck that sometimes it seems like it that they could be more. I just feel like why does it always have to be just one guy? You know, there could be more than one guy.
I mean, as far as like the face of of the company,
yeah.
I think that's just maybe because that's just tradition. It's been that way for so long.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I get that, but sometimes traditions need to change.
Yeah,
and I feel like just with the audience in the way that it's expanding and that you can find more people who would be like, oh, I like this guy, but also I love this guy and. You can draw money that way. It doesn't have to just be one guy. We have a conversation a lot about, like, I mean, we know they love Roman Reigns, and she likes Roman Reigns. It's taken me longer to come around. Mm-hmm. I am a fan of his work. I think he's good. I do believe that he's still a little green, mm-hmm. but that's on me. But we're just always talking about, like, it works for him. She likes him because... She hits it is everything for her, you know.
He's the total package for a girl. He's a good looking guy, he's big, you know, and that's the thing too. We know, and I agree with you 1,000%. I think Roman is maybe 5% as good as he's gonna be 3, 4, 5 years from now when he's gonna be amazing because A, he's second generation, he's grown up his whole life, he just has it. Mm-hmm. But people that don't know the intricacies of the business will think he's great now.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of how wrestling works is there's always the hardcore fans, like once again, like show business, the hardcore comedy fans that know everything about comedy and I've been listening. And then there's people who come just to laugh.
Yes.
You know, and which is more important to connect with?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And you can service both is the best. And I think that's what's best about the wrestling right now is that it's I don't feel like it's ever been in a better position because you have your WWE and if you don't like that and you don't like the tradition, there's so many other options right now that are viable options more than there ever been since WCW folded. Mm-hmm. You know, you can watch Ring of Honor, you can watch PWG, you can watch, I mean, I guess not on TV, but you watch Ring of Honor on TV, you can watch Lucha Underground, you can watch TNA, even though they don't seem that great either.
what do you think of TNA? Do you think they have a chance to continue forward? Or
I mean, I think it's what you see a lot of, where it's just like there's a lot of talented workers there who seem to be undone by the management.
Mm-hmm.
That for some reason or another they don't have the right structure to make it pop properly, because there's a lot of talent there. EC3 is amazing. Like, I think he's one of the best.
Yeah, he's come along really well, hasn't he?
He really has developed a lot, and I just feel like he's just a real solid hand. They've had a bunch of solid hands, you know. I mean, there was that time period in 2005 or so where they were really, really hot, and they just mm-hmm. kind of just decided to go another way.
like I said, I love the fact that you're so into wrestling and so you understand what's going on. Like you said, sometimes the management will tie your hands, but you don't have to worry about that in comedy so much. You pretty much just do whatever you want, right?
Yeah, that's the best part about stand-up.
Right, but you don't have a team like your agent, manager, Ron. You got to do more of this type of stuff or more of that type of stuff.
No, not at all. You just kind of do what you want to do. And it's always, to me, you know, you have a test audience every night. So, that's to me the difference between someone who wants to be a good stand-up and someone who's kind of just wants attention. It's like, oh, I could go out there and do jokes that don't work. But if you go out there and you tell me enough times that this didn't work, I'll drop it.
Mm-hmm,
I'll
mm-hmm.
come up with something else. And we'll work together and we'll figure out. Maybe I thought the punchline was something else and you're telling me that it's not. And it's earlier than I thought it was. And
listen to the reactions and kind of mold your set accordingly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's smart, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than just trying to force it down their throat, which is, again, what they're trying to do with Roman Reigns.
So you have the network. Do you spend a lot of time on the network?
Too much.
What are you watching on it?
I watch a lot of NXT. I watch a lot of Mid-South wrestling.
Oh, okay.
Because...
Is that Bill Watts?
Which one is... Wait, okay. Is either Mid-South or Smoky Mountain?
Smoky Mountain was Cornette.
I'm watching Smoky Mountain.
Thrill Seekers, baby.
Yes. Yeah, I'm watching you and Lance.
Yeah.
You guys are young, you're hot, and you're new on the scene.
They had us do this vignette. It's going viral right now when we first got there. And like you said, we're the new hot young upstarts, and he wanted us to, you know, to appeal to the girls in the territory. So they had us, like, you know, working out of the gym and just showing, like, gratuitous shots of our asses during squats. And it's very homoerotic.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, we're walking down the corridor and these two girls see us and they beckon us. And then we go into the room and put on the do not disturb sign. Now, these girls, I mean, I don't know where Cornette found these girls, but they were not worthy of being on TV, shall we say. And I was like, Jimmy, let me go to the mall. Give me 5 minutes and I'll find two hotter. Let me go to a strip club for 5 minutes. You want to be on TV? Yes. Let me go to Hooters. Anyway, he's like, no, we got to do it.
I know,
like,
you guys are the thrill seekers. This is what you do. You'll find a thrill anywhere. You guys have problems emotionally. And so you'll sleep with anybody. That's the bit.
That's exactly
and that's what we want the girls to know, is that right, if they just see you, they can have you.
And that's what happened the whole time I was in the territory, was that there wasn't a lot of hot girls in the whole area. And so the rumor was going around that I was gay, and I'm like, I'm not gay, I just have standards.
Well, that's good.
You know what I mean?
Good.
Yeah.
Good to have standards.
Even when I got to WWE, Bruce Pritchard said, I heard you were gay. I'm like, where'd you hear that from? Cornette told me. I'm like, oh, you should have seen what was down there.
No,
it's not up to snuff.
Oh, I've been watching episodes, so I know. I see that crowd. It's the best. That's why I like watching it. When you see, like, New Jack and Mustafa, the gangsters, going out there, and it takes on a whole different thing from when they were in ECW, because then it's like, they're like, the whole crowd just hates us, and when they want us to die, it's really silly. I've been watching a lot of it because I'm writing this cartoon about wrestling.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more.
It's just basically a thing that I've always been interested in when I was a kid, was just basically of what wrestling was completely real, and it also affected politics on every level. So basically, it's a show set in the 80s where wrestling is the most popular sport or entertainment in the planet, and the best wrestler in the world is also the president of the United States, and he's solving problems through body slams and chokeholds. And I think it's gonna be funny. It should be good.
Is it something that you've sold already?
Mm-hmm. I sold it, but I don't know when it's gonna come out. It's gonna be on that CISO, which is NBC's digital platform, like their Netflix.
What's it called?
It's called The Show.
Yeah,
the show's called Squashed. Yeah, I knew you. See, I really was like, I hope when I says it, he knows why and he likes it, and I feel like you did. So it's good.
Have you ever met any of the guys, WWE guys at all?
I know a few older guys. I know some of you, like Big E, and Xavier are friends of mine, and Kofi. So I know all the New Day. I know not many WWE guys. I'm from when Kevin Steen or Owens was here at PWG. I know him a little bit from that. And then I'm real close with Sean, with X-Pac. Like, we've hung out at a couple conventions, and he's a great guy. I like him. He's a good guy to talk to.
Who would you want to meet if you could meet anybody?
One of the best ones I met, and I really like, was I met Piper when he was in, because he was lived in Portland.
That's right, yeah.
He was doing comedy shows, and so a friend of mine was opening for him, and so I tagged along because I was like, I gotta go meet Roddy Piper.
So what was Piper's comedy show like?
That I didn't see because I had my own show to go to.
Okay.
But I was like, I'm gonna go with you guys to meet Piper, and then I'm gonna go do my set.
Right.
But he was delightful as a person.
Mm-hmm.
That was my favorite thing that I took away from, because until that point, I had done a lot of stand-up, and I met a few other comedians, but not really many famous people. And the couple that I've met have been real, like the typical famous people, where they're just real, like, I think I'm the best. Yeah. And this was the first time where I met someone and I was like, oh, you remind me of me and you're famous and you're do something. And it's like, oh, maybe I can do it because it's like, you're very just relaxed and you're just like, I love my family and I'm just so happy to perform and this is what I like doing. And I'm just lucky. His whole thing was that he was just like, I'm just lucky people show up to come see me. And I was just like, and he was just very like, oh, sit down, let's talk. Especially once he knew I was a wrestling fan, he was just like, oh, just sit down. You got any questions? What do you want to know? And it was just like, oh, you're just the chillest, nicest guy. You never met me in my life. And I was just like, that's the best. So he was probably my favorite wrestler that I've met.
But what about, is there someone that you want to meet?
That I want to meet. Who would I want to meet the most? Maybe Mick Foley. I like him a lot. I think I would like to meet him. Oh, Ric Flair. I want to meet Ric Flair. That's who I want to meet. Just to see if he really just is always Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I hear.
Yes, he is.
And I want to see it.
Here's what we'll do. Next time we have a show in LA, I think we have him coming up very soon. Come to the show. And I'll take you backstage. You can meet Ric Flair.
You recorded it, so now everyone. Yeah, everyone.
I have to live up to it. And I'll bring your girl too, because like she just went. She's like, duh. She's calling the shots. Last question: what's your favorite episode of I Love Lucy?
Oh, my favorite episode of I Love Lucy is the one where they buy a freezer. She wants her own freezer, and then she accidentally buys a whole side of beef, and so she has to hide it from Ricky and try to get rid of it. And my favorite part is when she and Ethel take a baby carriage and they fill it up with meat and a scale and they go into a butcher shop and they try to sell meat like drugs and steal customers away from it. So they keep tapping on like people in line and you go, psh, hey, come over here. You want a good deal? Tell you what I'm gonna do. I got T-bone, rump roast, sirloin, steak. And he's just like, anything I want, 79 cents a pound. And it's just like so funny. And she looks real cute. And it's just like, man, you're like, she was doing so much at once. She was like being silly, but she was taking charge. She was being like very much a drug dealer, but in a very, very funny way.
In the 50s.
Yeah. So it was like hilarious. It's my favorite episode. I mean, I like the classic ones, like the, you know,
Vitamin of Edgman.
Yeah, that one. Like, that's my mom's favorite. Yeah, mom's favorite. But for me, like, nothing beats the one where she's like, and then she gets stuck in the freezer and she does like great physical comedy. Or the one where she and Harpo hang out and they do the mirror bit together.
Oh yeah, I mean, she had the hat on and everything. Yeah. Classic stuff, man. Yeah, you're a good classic. Dude, Ron.
You're a good dude, Chris.
Remember, Ric Flair, I'm gonna take you to meet him.
Yay! Stay alive, Rick.
That's the best ending ever. On that note,
thanks to Ron Funches. He's so funny and undateable. You can also see him in the third season of Transparent, which is available now at Amazon. It's an Amazon original show. He's also in the upcoming Trolls movie. He doesn't play a troll. He actually keep your comments to yourself. He's one of the voices of one of the trolls, and you can hear by his voice how ridiculous that's going to be. That's out November 4th. Everybody go make that a number one movie so that Ron makes lots of money. All right, speaking of Amazon, that is the OG sponsor of Talk is Jericho and the easiest way to support this show. All my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You got them Amazon links for the USA, the UK, the Canada. Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy just about anything you can think of on Amazon, and using the Talk is Jericho Amazon links won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. So just go to podcastone.com, click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. All my great sponsors are there as well. DDP Yoga, get 20% off the DDP Yoga program, plus 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. You know I've been using it. You know I feel good about it. I want you to feel the same. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. DraftKings, you want to play fantasy football? Play with the Kings. Play with DraftKings. Use the promo code Y2J to play for free with your first deposit at DraftKings.com. And, of course, don't forget March 15, 2017. It's the biggest podcast ever. When Mick Foley joins Talk is Jericho, the countdown clock is still running 167 days and counting. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And on Friday, he worked for the WWE for 30 years. All right, that's got to be some kind of record. I've been there 17. He worked for the WWE for 30 years. I'm talking about the Brooklyn Brawler, Steve Lombardi, one of the most famous enhancement guys, and not even enhancement, more than that, a long-term, long-time quality employee who won some, lost one, but always did a great job in every single aspect of the business. He worked in the ring. He worked outside of the ring. He worked behind the scenes. He was in charge of pre-tapes. He was in charge of watching the rookies do promos to decide if they could go to the next level or not. Steve Lombardi has his entire 30-year career telling all the stories about all of the guys he worked with and traveled with, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Macho Man Randy Savage. The list goes on and on and on and on. He'll be here on Friday. You don't want to miss it. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And we'll see you on Friday with a big Yeah Boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.